Today on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast, we are discussing Hawkeye episodes 1 and 2, Never Meet Your Heroes, as well as Hide and Seek. All that and more of this that we have no control over.
Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. My name is Matthew Carroll.
And I'm Jeff Randall.
And we have two wonderful guests in the studio with us today. We have Matthew Fox and Melissa Khalil. How you guys doing?
Good morning. I am fantastic. I woke up at 2 a.m. to watch these episodes, and they were great.
I stayed up till 2 a.m., but then I convinced Fox to go to bed with, not to go to bed with me, but to go to bed.
I need dinner and flowers for that. But yeah, I'm super psyched. It's been a while since I got to join you all on the MCU cast, and as someone who has been a long time, like, MCU is best on Netflix, this felt like the closest thing to a Netflix MCU show, and I am so here for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Totally agree. Just to give you guys an update on the cast, and for anybody who happened to show up last night, we were supposed to do this at 2 a.m. last night, do the live watch, then immediately do the podcast, and we got there, and Jeff could not make it. I thought Melissa couldn't make it, and then no one was showing up in the chat, so we were like, well, I guess no one's here. Let's just put it off till the morning because I'm not going to be as good as I will in the morning if I sleep first, because I'd been flying all day. I flew to Dallas. And then it turned out once I shut it down, I got messages from people saying, oh, I was in the chat. And we were like, wait, what? And then apparently it was Cena was messed up. So if you were in the chat and waiting at 2 a.m., very sorry, because it wasn't showing anybody but me and Fox. So it was weird.
Very sorry. I could not stay awake. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I should have made that decision when you made that decision. I didn't.
Yeah.
We stayed up and then decided, no one's here. Let's do this in the morning.
I think it was 10 p.m. I was like, I'm good. Yeah, I should be fine. And then about midnight, I was like, God, I'm dying. Mm-hmm. And it's been so many nights of like staying up until, you know, 1:30 to 2:30 working on code and getting this project done. And it was like, oh, it's all catching up to me right now. Okay. Maybe I should sleep forever. And yeah.
Yeah. I'm super glad you're done and you can join us. Because let's talk about Hawkeye.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a show to talk about.
Mm-hmm. So what were your thoughts, Jeff?
So, you know, Melissa and Fox here started with a lot of excitement. I unfortunately don't have as much excitement for part of the show, for part of it.
Interesting. Jump into a negative first, though. All right, go for it.
No, it's not entirely negative. It's just there's part of it that I'm not as much a fan of. I absolutely love Clint Barton dad. Like, I want Clint Barton dad content all day, every day. I want him and his kids. I want to watch like a sitcom of him and his kids all the time because I love them. I love that aspect of him. I love them so much. Like when Nate signed "I love you, Dad" to him, I was like, oh my God, I love this kid so much. Like it's, and like seeing Clint reacting to Rogers the Musical, like possibly the worst musical that I've ever seen that I need to see.
but I can stand to see a little more.
Yeah, right. Like watching him react to it and being hurt and broken at seeing the Nat on stage dancing around, like, you know, he watched her die. He watched her sacrifice herself, fought with her over the chance to sacrifice themselves for the universe. And he sees this person prancing around on stage, like, you know, that's gotta hurt. Mm-hmm. And I was just, every time it went back to Kate, I was like, no, give me Clint. Like, tell
Interesting.
Me, no, I want more Clint. Like, when Kate was in the costume and fighting the Russian guys, I wasn't convinced. I was not convinced that she was a, you know, multi-time state champion fighter. It, like, the choreography just wasn't there for me. She was not convincing as a fighter. It may have just been that scene. It may have just been, you know, that little bit, but I liked her more as the kid sidekick who's trying to force this guy to teach her how to do the things.
Mm.
Like, watching her fangirl out over, like, you're my favorite Avenger, can you sign my bow? Like, that was great. I love her for that. Like, seeing him go from dad, like, dad Barton to kind of, like, father figure-esque Barton and, like, you know, trying to pull out the dad mentality on this kid. Like, what are you, 17? I'm 22. Same thing. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't you be in school? Like, all those things. I love that interaction. I wasn't sold on her as a fighter. And I think that kind of put me off a little bit right at the beginning of it. I think that's the only part of the show that I was unhappy with.
I did not feel that way. But, like, mostly because you see her in the light of Clint as a fighter. Because basically every move she does in that scene you're talking about is just an evasive maneuver. Like, she has one where she, like, drops a guy on a hood, but it's still just to get away. Like, the guys are attacking her, and she just does a move to kind of skirt them and get away. Skirt, skirt, just going left and right.
Well, I meant in the wine room, where, like, in the room where the black market auction was happening.
I guess that entire sequence I put together.
That part especially was just... It didn't do it for me.
Okay.
I thought the same thing, too. Like, she was, like, hopping over, like, 8-foot wine cellar counters. I was like, where did this come from? Like, who is this person? Like, obviously, they had the whole montage at the beginning. You know, she's a great fencer, gymnast. I think there was something else, too. Mm-hmm. This is a new thing. It seems like martial arts. Thank you. I was like, this seems like a new thing for you. Like, I like it, but I feel like it just kind of came out of nowhere. But I'll roll with it.
I guess none of that bothered me because I've been watching, like, a bunch of, like, college students play tag championships. You know what I'm talking about? Have you guys seen this on, like, ESPN3?
Where can I stream such events? Sidebar.
I don't. It's like I've been watching ESPN3, and it's people doing the tag championships.
The Ocho.
And it's just, like, one guy chasing another guy, but they're doing all that kind of stuff. They're, like, jumping over big railings and stuff. And I'm like, if those guys can do it, then, like, the... whatever multi-state champion, like, gymnast can probably handle it.
So I feel like I just need to record that moment of Matt saying that because, for all of us, because many of us will often ask Matt, like, hey, what about this awesome new content? Let's record on this. And the response is often, very legitimately, I just don't have time to watch this. I've always been very happy to hear that excuse. I feel like maybe...
Here's where I've watched the tag championships a lot for some reason. One of the bars I play in on Sundays, I guess it's always on Sundays, because one of the bars I play in on Sundays, they have it on one of the TVs that's right in front of me. And so there's always a bunch of TVs in front of me at all the bars I play in, but a lot of times they'll be playing narrative content that I can't really, like, follow. But tag championships are perfect to follow while you're playing music. I'm up there playing music and watching these guys dive and duck and sweep, and it's pretty great.
That's fair. Just on the fighting thing, though, all I was going to say is the sense that I got was that she was someone who has done competition martial arts for all of her life.
Right.
But then now that she's in an actual combat setting where, like, there aren't exact rules and you're not trying to, like, score a point and then stop, like, that's... To me, she was, like, the person who has been, like, studying academic and, like, in a gym, but now that she's in the real world, that's where she's really struggling. And so I'm not as knowledgeable at fight choreography, so I might have been missing a lot of the stuff you were picking up on, but that's what I got in terms of her being, like, having a lot of great moves, but also feeling very timid and unschooled.
You know, that, like, using that as headcanon could probably, like, that does kind of ease the not anger, but, like, the distaste for it. Like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. She's, you know, she's a gym fighter rather than a street fighter.
Yeah.
And Hawkeye, you know, like, when Clint Barton sees it, he's just like, God, these kind of people, they're the worst. Mm-hmm. And just, like, walks up and trashes everybody because, you know, that's his life was, you know, being a like he said, you know, I fought Thanos.
Well, that's kind of what I was getting at when I said, because you see it in the light of what Hawkeye does. Like, she does all these moves. She has all this time with these tracksuit mafia guys, gets away from one, gets away from the other, might knock them down, but they're all kind of, like, getting back up. And then she ends up in a car with them surrounding her. But then when Hawkeye shows up, he lays them out. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So there's clearly, she's good, but she's not Hawkeye good, I guess. There's, like, there's levels. Yeah.
Right.
So I bought that.
It's a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
we're probably going to see later that this Echo person, or sorry, this Lachlan Cox, whoever this character is,
right,
is going to be somewhere else on the spectrum. That's a weird way to say that. On this fight spectrum, fighter spectrum. And, you know, fingers crossed, might get Florence Pugh, right?
Oh, right, we definitely right. are, by the way. It's confirmed. And I thought we were getting her because when they got in the van, they're like, no, she wants him alive. I was like, here we go. Where's my girl? Where are the pockets? Where is she?
Where are the pockets?
Yeah, like, it wasn't her.
Russian guys, her as a leader, like, come on. Come on, like, it was right there.
I felt so clowned. I was like, oh, she's coming, but just,
The whole episode, I just kept thinking of all of the different Defenders characters they could connect with.
Yeah.
Yeah, Luke Cage wouldn't take this shit.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if nothing else, my hope is that, like, I'd love to get one of the Defenders in that regard, but if nothing... You know, we already know they're on the run from the law. I'm hoping for, like, Kate or Barton or one of them has to appear in court, and, like, Matt or Foggy or someone like that shows up to help them out. You know, just, even just that, like, give us that. And let me actually just ask that, like, did you all get that same sense? This felt to me very much like a Netflix show. Like, the opening credits very much were that of the first episode, like, just the... Mm-hmm. The atmosphere of it, the not really superpowers. Did you guys get that same sense?
I love the opening sequence, actually, in that first episode, because it did so much to tell the story of her growing up. You know, it was the montage without actually having a montage in a weird way. And we skipped a lot of the things that, like, that they could have, you know, wasted a lot of time filming and like showing us different versions of Kate throughout the years, and, you know, having to get a bunch of different actors.
I wanted more of that little girl that said, "I need a bow and arrow." Like, I loved that line. It was just like her inspiration of Hawkeye, and just being like, it's just a little badass, angry girl going, "I need a bow and arrow."
I love that point of view in the opening sequence, though. Like, the side of her building is just gone, and all she sees is, like, Clint just firing arrows at a million miles an hour, jumping off the roof as it explodes, and then flying into the building. I was like, oh, what a cool POV from, like, an iconic moment that we all know. I loved it.
Yeah, totally. And I love that she's like, "You got to teach me about trick arrows." And he's like, "There are no trick arrows." And she's like, "Bullshit. I saw it.
I was there.
You lying sack of shit. I saw you jump off that building."
I'm looking forward to the moment when, like, she tells him that, like, "No, you saved my life. Like, I watched you in the Battle of New York save my life." I feel like that moment has to happen.
Oh, it has to. Yeah.
I think for sure, because I think there's a number of really interesting themes that we're already getting introduced to, and one of them is a kind of, like, don't meet your heroes. You know, it's just this idea of, like, she has had this, like, mythological idea of Clint, of Hawkeye, in her mind for the whole time, and I thought one of the most poignant parts of the whole thing to me was sort of watching her, not even just disappointment, but, like, the whole, like, that's not how I wanted our meeting to go. You know, like, when he's saying goodbye to her, and she just is not ready. You know, she clearly wants him to be her role model. She wants to, like, you know, be his sidekick now and forever. And I think it's not coincidental that we're getting that as Hawkeye is watching himself on stage, you know, and it's he himself is wrestling with how do people see him and the difference between Barton the man versus Hawkeye the legend. And so I'm just really interested in seeing how that whole storyline is going to play out between the two of them. Like, you know, who is she connecting? Is she connecting to Barton, or is she connecting to Hawkeye?
Well, and I think what you bring up is perfectly apt. Like, the idea that she has seen Hawkeye in this way that Hawkeye is pushing against. Hawkeye's watching the Rogers musical going like, oh no, I'm not comfortable. I'm the spy. I'm not comfortable being the hero, really. Like, I'm not comfortable being the guy who everyone looks to. And so throughout the whole show, they buy his dinner. People walk up to him for autographs and all this stuff. And so when he sees Kate Bishop, she's different. She's someone who he saved her life. He inspired her entire life. When she says, "I need a bow and arrow," that propels her life into this life of excellence as an archer and a martial artist and all this stuff. And, like, he doesn't know that yet. He doesn't know that that's, like, why, who she is. And so when she walks up to him and says, can you sign this? It's like, it's just another in the line of people that are just wanting to piece of his fame, and that's not who he is. And he is pushing against that idea. And when he asks, like, what am I selling? She says, inspiration. Like, yeah. You're not just selling toys. You're selling inspiration. Like, you inspired me. And I think he's going to have to learn that lesson that, like, his fame can have a positive aspect to it.
Yeah. Well, I think, though, that I love this juxtaposition of it, is that she sees the outside of it. She sees the sheen, the sparkle, the glamour of the hero world. But he is dealing with, you know, the PTSD, basically, of all of the shit that they've gone through, all of the awful things that have had to be done as a hero, having to watch your friend throw themselves out of your arms mm-hmm. into an abyss and fall and die. Like, he has had some bad shit happen, you know? And that's all that's in his mind. Like, when you know, he's got the hearing aid, she's like, you know, what happened to make you need the hearing
such
aid?
Such a
he's
good
like,
moment.
Couldn't tell you.
No, it's just such a beautiful, beautiful joke. Cause he says, how did you lose your hearing? And then it just shows a him from all of the Avengers moving, having explosions next to his face. And he's like, hard to tell.
Yeah. Hard to tell.
All the things happened to me.
It's all of it. All of it is the reason I lost my hearing, like my whole freaking life. That's what.
Yeah. So good.
I loved that. I mean, just as like, you know, I always want more disability representation, and I'm so happy they're bringing that in from his character, because I know that was a big part of the comic books. But the other thing just that I am so excited to see is that not only is this – and I want to give a quick shout-out. Cordo B just commented in the Twitch chat, who does Clint want to be? Can he reconcile his three identities? Because I think it's not even just about Barton or Hawkeye. It's also about Ronan. And I remember when I watched the, Infinity War and Endgame, thinking like, okay, I get where Ronan's coming from as this character, but like a lot of people, I think, were like, doesn't seem very heroic what he's doing here. Mm-hmm. And I like that, like this seems very clearly acknowledging that, like that he is troubled in some ways by what he did as Ronan, and that now that the Ronan identity is out there as well, and that he's both, everyone thinks of him as this great hero, and he remembers this time when he was like, killing bad people, but basically killing people to work out his issues about losing his family, not out of like, you know, what needed to be happening necessarily. I'm just so excited to see all of that coming together and seeing, like, I think it's going to be a great exploration of who he is and with all of this history he has.
It's really four identities if you think, because it's like the hero that everyone sees that Kate Bishop's clearly influenced by. But then there's the spy that he thinks of himself as. And then there's the dark Ronin times. But then there's just the father. You know what I mean? Right. Like, there's just these, like, all these fractured parts of him trying to be who he needs to be. And it's a lot of weight on him, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I will say about him being a father, like, that aspect of him being a father grounded this show in a way that, like, I don't know, I guess I didn't expect. It was really emotional when even these smaller missions that I don't think of Hawkeye being scared to go on or having his family like he said, I fought Thanos, like these thugs shouldn't bother him and they kind of don't. But like when you see his family worrying about him and his wife discussing, the whole thing, I love the wife talking about, him going and using one of Nat's moves, which is did she call it the catch and release?
Catch and release.
Yeah.
Yeah. He called it a little catch and release.
Yeah. Which is what Nat would always do, is let herself get caught and by whoever.
Yep.
Love it. I love it.
He's given me everything. And, you know, speaking on Linda Cardellini, Mama, as he keeps calling her, Mama Barton, it's interesting to see a hero persona, a hero person, talk about the things that they have done with their significant other rather than just try to hide it from them. Because, you know, on the phone, she's like, you know, what about the troubling wardrobe? Mm-hmm. And like that indicates that he's talked to her about it. Like he's confided in her. Like this is what I did while you were gone. Like this isn't me, I know, but you know, you were gone for 5 years. Like I went down a dark path and you know, I'm going to not be that guy anymore. You're back, but you know, this is what happened. And she accepts that because, mm-hmm. you know, she loves him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's really his whole self with his partner. That's huge.
Yeah. It's so great to just see that, that openness between them like that. And, you know, cause there's so many times in superhero media, it's like, I can't tell my family. I can't tell anybody what I'm doing. Like, no, mm-hmm. it's great. Like,
yeah.
And we get to see her more when she's on the phone, and she's, I like her a lot.
It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. She's gorgeous.
We didn't get that till like halfway through the second episode. Cause I was wondering as we were like going through the whole Ronan stuff, if she knew, like if he told his family, because, you know, that's a pretty dark thing. Like that happened obviously while they were gone. So I didn't know if that was going to be something he was going to try and hide and just kind of deal with himself while sending the kids back home, or if, mm-hmm. you know, she knew. Obviously she does. So
yeah,
it seems like the kids don't know though. And
I don't think so.
That makes sense though.
I think I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, I for sure.
Keep the bad shit away from the kids, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder how many of the other Avengers know. Cause clearly Natasha knew, but I wonder like, did, oh no!
Well, Rhodey knew.
Yeah, that's, yeah, because they were having like updates about him. So yeah, I'm guessing most of the Avengers also know, but still, that's going to be a small circle.
And I think it was kind of odd. Like I noticed that they were like, "Oh, nobody knows who the mysterious Ronan is," and like at the end of Black Widow, like the picture that Val shows Yelena is Clint without the mask in the Ronan suit. So somebody out there besides the Avengers knows that it's Clint. Mm-hmm. Obviously, right. You know, the mainstream, you know, media and whatever doesn't know it was him, but like there are people out there that know that it was him.
Mm. The Dark Avengers know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do this to me, man.
I did have a moment though of like looking at the two of them, they are not the same body size. And I feel like the most like basic Photoshop use could like compare the pictures of the two of them and be like, these are not the same two people in this suit.
That was embarrassing.
Yeah.
They were like fighting, and I'm like, the eyeshadow should have been the giveaway. That is not the same person.
Especially one of the Tracksuit Mafia seemed to know him. He says, Ronan? Like, as if it almost seemed like they were friends. Like, he didn't even say it like, Ronan, I'm going to get you. He's like, Ronan? Like, almost as if they had known each other in that previous life.
I kind of took that, like, Ronan? Like, as if, because they said it's been, like, a couple years since the Ronan last, you know, struck. So I thought it was more like, oh, this guy's back?
Yeah.
Like, I guess that was more how I took it.
That, I think that's totally a valid interpretation. It just, the way the actor delivered it, it seemed familiar to me.
You know, I think it was familiar. And then, like, oh, God, he's back?
Right.
Because, you know, the discussion between him and his wife Laura, like that discussion was, oh, those idiots, yeah, those idiots, like they very much know who they are,
right? Which made me think maybe he's had interactions, and maybe even non combat interactions, like if he knows they're idiots, maybe he's talked to them, which made that line make sense as like possibly Ronan, like mm-hmm. I remember when you threatened me, Batman, or that kind of thing.
His nonchalant attitude with them when he was captured, like, I could see through this bag, guys, come on.
Yeah, oh, it's so good.
And
when he pulls his
hands out, and he's just like, I'm here to talk to your boss. They're like, oh, God, and pull their guns out.
No,
like,
I need to talk.
Oh, my God.
I need to talk to a manager. It's such a good line.
Is your manager around?
You're the shift manager.
Yeah, you're the shift manager. I need the manager.
Yeah, it was just, to me, it was like Hawkeye combining like the great Natasha moment with Karen.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, he's pulling out his own Karen side.
It was Hawk Karen, yeah.
Yeah.
It was just so funny because he's like a world-class assassin. And like these little dudes from, you know, like a small borough in New York just capture him. They're like, we got him. We got us an Avenger, boys.
That was easy, bro.
And then she's like,
calling everybody bro.
Yeah. She's like, you're not on my level. Okay. So yeah, I just need to talk to who's ever in charge and I'll be on my way.
Yeah. You're so far beneath me. Absolutely unreal how far beneath me you are. Your guns do not matter to me. I would destroy all of you. Can I talk to who's in charge, please?
So I don't read the comics, but just from these first two episodes, the Tracksuit Mafia is just like, are they just like gun runners and drug dealers and just Like, it's just your typical like kind of gang?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't know gang if there was anything. A. Okay.
Yeah.
Anything special about them?
The thing in the comics that is, like, it could be exciting, if it, you know, happens to show up here, is that in the Matt Fraction run that they're drawing so heavily from, Kingpin was a big player.
Yeah.
I do think it is very possible he will show up in this show. I think it's just logically. There were two lines in this episode that I was like, he's got to be showing up, because they said, before Armand died, he said, I have, I don't know, something like, I have big friends or something like that. I've powerful friends. And I was like, mm-hmm. Who are your powerful friends? And then there was another line talking about Ronan, and he said he almost took out the head of organized crime in New York. And I was like, mm-hmm. Who's the head of organized crime in New York?
I think we know who the head of organized crime in New York is.
Well, especially because the head of organized crime in New York had a gang of like low level, like as you were kind of saying, Melissa, you know, Russian mobsters who thought they were, you know, top dog, but really were just pawns. The taxi driver group. And like, to me, this is just, it's that exact same motif. You know, it's a bunch of like Russian thugs, the Russian mafia, who are almost assuredly like someone else is pulling the strings, even though they think they're, you know, the shits.
Hey guys, this is Jeff. I'm here to make you an offer you can't refuse. Well, you can refuse it, but you shouldn't. This offer is NordVPN for a great, great price. I'm sure you've heard all about VPN services in the past, but NordVPN has got to be the best in the business. And especially with the holidays coming up and online shopping being a huge thing, especially with the world and the state that it's in, your data has never been more important to be secure. And the best way to secure your data is to encrypt that traffic with the service that NordVPN provides. If you're traveling for the holidays, if you're using your phone, your laptop, your iPad, whatever, in an airport, in a restaurant, public Wi-Fi is notorious for being a gigantic hotbed for hackers to steal data. You can have NordVPN on up to 6 of your devices simultaneously, so everything you have in all of your pockets and luggage and all of the zippers and everything, all of them are secure. And if there's something on a streaming service that is in a different place than you are, then you can access one of over 59 different countries around the globe using NordVPN to, you know, make it seem like you're anywhere in the world virtually and access content from those regions. It's a no-brainer for people who want to watch BBC things or Peaky Blinders or people abroad who want to watch things from the US. But the big thing here is they have a Cyber Month deal going on right now. You go to nordvpn.com/MCU podcast or just use the code MCU podcast and you can get up to 73% off of your NordVPN plan plus a bonus gift. You got to be quick though, because this offer is for a limited time only. One more time, that is nordvpn.com/MCU podcast or use the code MCU podcast whenever you're checking out. You get up to 73% off of your NordVPN plan plus a bonus gift. And it really is the best thing to secure your traffic. NordVPN.com/MCU podcast. Do it.
Oh, there were so many good little moments in this show. Like, I feel like there were just like little hints here and there that I have like, that it's, oh, there's so many good things. Like the Thanos was right.
So good.
On the urinal. I was like, mm. Those are fighting words. Like, that man lost his entire family and his best friend. Mm-mm.
Yep. But there's also a look on Clint's face, because Clint's also frustrated with the world, kind of. Like, he's sort of disaffected at this moment. He's lost so much. He lost his friend, and they're dancing on stage about it. Like, he seems to feel very dejected. And then he looks at that, and he doesn't go like, grr. He goes like, like, stop your nihilism. It's making me nihilistic, and I don't like it.
He does a little, And then immediately is like harried by this guy who A, stands too close in the urinals, like all these other freaking urinals here, man. You stand right next to me. And then he's like, a selfie would be cool. It's like, it's not really the appropriate time. Like, I got my dick out, man. Come on. And then the guy follows him from the urinals to the sink and is like, is this a more appropriate time? Like, no, bro, you haven't washed your hands, first off. Like, gross. Get away from me. Like, it's weird. Like, he saw that, he saw that Thanos was right, kind of like huffed at it, and then immediately he's like accosted by this guy. It's like, yeah. God, I wish this guy would be dusted.
Yeah, exactly. So, we could stand to lose a few of these guys. It's kind of like the, just the like implication.
And I just loved that moment, especially for everything about the characters, but also, like, this show is hitting so much of my, I grew up in New York City nostalgia, Christmas in New York, etc. But like, every year, one of the most common urban legends that you heard again and again and again was about running into some celebrity at the urinals in, you know, whatever fancy restaurant. Like, it was just the kind of thing, like, every year there was some new version of that story. And they were all probably urban myths, but like, so just to have that particular moment felt like such a wonderful little shout out to that, like, little bit of, you know, New York mythology.
Nice.
That's interesting to, it's interesting to hear that, that there is such a mythos in, like, within New York of, or, you know, within a region that is just so unique to that. Cause like, you know, anywhere else, like here in, you know, in Birmingham, it's like, you know, celebrity showed up for a thing, you know, I talked to him on the street and it's like, oh, you immediately are just like, cool, they must have been here for a specific reason. Like, there's no other reason they would come here other than to do a specific thing. Like, and you were probably there. Like, it makes sense. You know, like when you were hiking, Matt, and they were filming in Ruffner Mountain. Yeah. Or was it Red Mountain?
It was Red Mountain. Yeah.
So like, you know, it's a very specific thing, but then like in New York, it's like, that's, you know, biggest city in the world.
Yeah.
They're probably just there existing.
Yep. New York and LA, like, it's just like, that's just where they live. Probably.
Yeah.
It's very likely they're there.
Mm-hmm. Like, of course you probably saw them. That's, they're people. They are also people.
Yeah.
That's neat. That's just really neat that that's a mythology.
Yeah. We've talked about it before, but I think that's what we're going to get a lot from this show is, you know, usually in the Avengers movies, it's like, you know, one big bad and, you know, them going from place to place, getting to the fight. But now it's like very street level, like how Fox said, it's very much kind of like a Netflix series where, you know, we're getting a lot of his family life. We're getting, you know, just the downtime, you know, after a fight. Like, it was brought up in Black Widow as well, but it's like, you know, him going to the store to buy Benadryl and Neosporin after a fight. And I immediately thought of that quote from Black Widow. It was like, I doubt the god from space needs to take an ibuprofen after a fight.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I love seeing this, just the small little things that you don't normally see in a full blown, like, box office movie. And I'm loving these shows.
Well, and something we're getting with that, like, not only are they going to the convenience store to take care of their issues with Neosporin and ibuprofen, but also, like, they talk about this just as they talked about in Falcon Winter Soldier, the fact that they've kind of lost connection to the money man. You know what I mean? Like, there's no longer, the Avengers aren't really a thing. And she's like, can't we go to Avengers Tower? And he's like, Tony sold that years ago. Mm. And it's just like, ooh. Yeah. So same sort of thing as when we discussed in Falcon Winter Soldier, like, how do the Avengers post Endgame? Like, what are they doing for money and life? You know what I mean?
That, like, made me think of, like, when they were in the restaurant, the guy was like, it's on us. I was like, thank God that man doesn't have income. Good Lord. I don't think his wife has a job probably. Like, I don't know how he's getting money.
Hasn't made a dime since 2012.
Right? Like, the shield collapsed. I don't know what this man's been doing.
Oh, God.
Thank goodness. He needs that money.
There's not like a Barton trust fund set up somewhere. Mm. Like, come on.
How are his kids going to go off to college? I'm so worried.
You'd think, like, I mean, to put that show on, they've got to buy the rights from people, right? Like, to use their likenesses. I don't know, celebrities, so I guess maybe not.
No, like a lot of times if you're a public figure, they can just do it. Yeah. So crazy.
And like, if we're being honest, there wasn't really a likeness going on.
It's like a contracting service.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to get paid. I mean, Jessica Jones, that was always such a thing, you know, like, is she going to find a paying client anywhere? I wanted to say something else on the street levelness of it. And this is, to me, something that I'm really enjoying about it. I'm going to say this in as positive terms as I possibly can. At this point, I feel like the MCU is functioning on a number of different levels. And more recently, we've been getting a lot of stuff about kind of like the celestial MCU and like the MCU, like playing with time and space and playing with like, you know, what's the nature of reality and what's the nature of like, you know, humanity as opposed to these different beings and stuff like that. And I think a lot of folks love that, and that's awesome. And I love that the MCU is comfortable doing, like, yeah, we're doing that, but also don't worry, we're still going to give you, like, street-level heroes, you know? And I just, for me, this is much more my style, and I really appreciate that we're getting all of that. You know, the MCU at this point is big enough to say, we can tell all sorts of different stories within this universe, and not everyone has to love all of them, and that's okay. And, like, I admit, I kind of went into some trepidation with that, and that, like, are we going to be getting, like, all the multiple timeline stuff? And it, maybe we still will, but, like, to me, this just felt so much more grounded and like, okay, cool. Now we're back to the stuff that I love.
Mm-hmm. Variant Clint. Variant Clint showing up would be so bonkers for this particular show.
Yeah, no, like, no, this feels very much more grounded. Like the fighting and the problems, but also the family really brings it down. I want to bring this up because I feel like we haven't talked about her enough. I really like Kate Bishop. I know, Jeff, when you brought her up, you were talking about the sort of negatives of Kate Bishop and liking her as a sidekick for Clint. But, like, I really like her. Like, I like her personality a lot. Like, I like the sort of, I don't know. She's very privileged. She doesn't.
Yeah.
She says, be careful at one point. And she's like, says, I'm always careful or something like that. And, like, no, she's not. She's not a careful person. Like, yeah, thing she did was the
slightest.
Like, knocking down that bell tower was, like, such a good establishing shot of, like, who she is as an adult. And then they talk about, they show that great apartment they're in. And I think it was it you, Fox, on the live chat who was like, it's clear that she's very wealthy based on this apartment. Mm-hmm. But in movies, that is not often the case. Like, sometimes someone has an amazing apartment and it's just unacknowledged. But then they quickly acknowledge, like, no, she's been rich her whole life. And I think she has this sort of, like, privileged life that she doesn't really, she feels a little immortal, I guess.
Well, her mom said
like, that exact thing,
know,
yeah.
Rich people and children always think they're immortal, and, you know, you've always had both.
You've always been both young and rich.
Yeah. I love that line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
I feel like that's something, like a parent says to everyone, like maybe not the rich thing for sure, but like, you know, and like I'm 25, like I'm still kind of at that young age where I feel like I'm pretty much invincible. So I like that, you know, we're getting that address that like she's a kid, like she probably doesn't think of the consequences of her actions. So she can just go put on, you know, a suit of someone who's known as a domestic terrorist and go around fighting, you know, gang members. Like she doesn't think about the consequences.
And it's so funny because, like, I very much relate to the youth part. Also, I think I've talked about this before. I went to school with a lot of people like that. And we, you know, those of us on scholarship would always talk about, like, yeah, if mommy and daddy can buy you out of anything, then, yeah, you don't feel like you have as many consequences. And so I kind of love that the one point the mother is saying, like, yeah, because you're rich, you don't think you have consequences. That's a problem. But, oh, by the way, me and my rich friends are going to fix that bell tower you broke.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's such a throwaway thing, but it's like, the fact that she's not in jail or being sued out of her mind for this destruction of major city property, it's because mommy and her friends can basically pay for it. Which I just thought was just such a, like, it was a throwaway line, but so perfect to establish who she is.
Yep.
Well, I think they are being kind of sued out of their minds, but, like, because they are so wealthy, it's just kind of like, well,
That's
another
problem.
Thing to have to pay for.
Right.
You know, it's like, I don't want to have to pay for it. Like she's upset that she has to pay for it. But when it comes down to it, it's not actually a problem to like that amount of money is not a problem.
Yeah.
Like, whereas like some, like one of us would be like, oh, I don't have life anymore because like my life is dedicated to rebuilding this, I guess.
Right. Well, that also establishes how wealthy they are, that this like irreplaceable clock/bell tower, they're like, oh, well, it's annoying. That's annoying that we have to play
it's an
irreplaceable thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's neat. And I kind of get that sort of Tony Stark, like, snarkiness off of her, where she's just sort of, where she is so privileged that she, and feels so, he kind of has that same aspect of feeling immortal all the time until the very end. You know what I mean? And I feel, I kind of get that sense of her. She's fun to watch because of that same brashness. So I dig her character, and I'm excited to see more.
There was a point where, I was actively thinking to myself, it's like, it's really hard to relate to this girl. Like, right. You know, she grew up privileged. She's, you know, she's got the high life. She's doing all of these things that it's like, that life is not my life. I have no context for how she lives at all, how she grew up at all. Like, I have none of that context. And it's a little bit difficult to like connect with her and see, you know, what she's doing, but like, or see why she's doing what she's doing, or feel, you know, that connection with her. But like, I, like when I started to think of that, I was like, you know, I just got to give that up. I don't relate in any way to Thor, you know, like right. I'm not a god from space. So just enjoy the ride, man. Like, I don't know. I was overanalyzing the hell out of her for some reason. And then I was like, stop it.
It's often the problems that people have that make us relate to them, especially these characters like Tony Stark and Thor, who are so perfect and have these perfect lives, then it's their problems with their family, their brother, that gives us the context to where we can relate to them. And with Tony, it's like the problems of like, what do I do now? What do I do with my power? What do I do with like this life that I have, and feeling conflicted about life? Like, we all have those feelings. Even if we have a small amount of power, there's like an aspect of like, what do I do with my time and money and resources to help make, do I make the world a better place, or do I just keep trying to stack stuff for myself? Is it okay if I break with my father's tradition? You know what I mean? Like, there's these sort of connections, and I don't think she is given a real problem yet, but I think we're about to find out. Like, she just fell into this, into the lap of this, situation with Echo and the tracksuit mafia.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
She fell in. Oh, I didn't know we were supposed to bring guns.
And so I think we're going to see her get problems, is my point.
Yeah.
And I think, to like Jeff's point, I think watching this, I very much get like Tony Stark, Peter Parker kind of vibes, where it's like, you know, the kid that I think wants to do good, and then the, you know, what are they called? Not an apprentice. What's the opposite of an apprentice? Apprenticer?
Mentor?
Mentor, that's the word I was looking for. We'll cut apprenticeur from the...
Definitely won't.
Sounds like a dinosaur.
It's an apprenticeurus rex.
Apprenticeur is what they were selling at the auction there.
Well, that'll get cut. Again, Peter Parker, Tony Stark vibes. But the thing I don't get about Kate Bishop yet is, I guess, what her motivation is. Like, I feel like Peter Parker, it's very much like, I want to stick up for the little guy. I want to make the neighborhood a safer place for all people. I don't know if I get that from Kate Bishop yet. I feel like her real motivation is just kind of to be a hero and hang out with Hawkeye. I don't know if her motivation is to do good yet.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really know what she's about.
She said that her motivation was to protect her mother. Mm-hmm. And in that line, I was like, oh. Okay, but why? Like, she just saw this horrible thing happen to her father. Clearly that's bad, but like, yeah, I think I'm with you, Melissa. I think I'll believe it if they tell it to us, but I don't feel like they've told it to us yet.
Well, yeah.
I don't think they've really told us in words yet, but I do think that like, they talk about what do you do in a hurricane, and they even replayed it in the intro. And I think that her father saying like, the only thing you can control in the face of a hurricane is the choices you make in the face of it. And then when she sees Clint Barton, like, making these choices in the face of a hurricane, I think that crazy thing in the beginning of the story, this crazy situation of being street level in the Battle of New York, or I guess skyscraper level in the Battle of New York, makes her go, like, I gotta be ready. And like, she wants to, and that's that like determination on her face when she says, I need a bow and arrow. And then I do think there's like a sense of that she's been so privileged that she's just like floated through life being very excellent and having the money to do so. But I think there's something there that like, she wants to be a protector. She wants to be ready when the hurricane comes. There's also the sense that like her mom, when did her mom start running the security company? I'm curious about that, because like, did her mom start running a security company after the battle, or was that before? Because I'm wondering if they both turned toward protection in the face of the problem that happened. And like, maybe one in a dark way and one in like sort of a inspired way.
I mean, Kate's parents were having an argument that seemed about something connected money. To business or money.
Right.
And so I imagine we're going to hear more about that, because I imagine that, yeah, like, the argument that they were having is in some way connected to all this other shadowy stuff that is now happening.
I thought
so many
they
years
said
later.
It was that they were going to move, because like the dad came into the room and she's like, I don't want to move.
Right.
Yeah. He said, we're going to have to sell the penthouse.
Yeah.
Or no, she said, we're going to have to sell the penthouse. And he was like, no, it'll be fine. But you notice that same penthouse is where she is still living.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Maybe their security business really took off after the Battle of New York. That would make sense.
Yeah. I think that's what's up, is that she built the security business. And like, that was the argument that she was having with Armand III out of seven, at least. And... out of at least seven, that argument that they were having, she said, I built this all myself, like, you know, with my own hands, basically. Mm-hmm. And he didn't believe that, you know, I've got some powerful friends too.
Yeah.
And I think it's that she probably has had some underworld dealings with people that are less than savory, maybe kingpins, if you will. And he doesn't like that, doesn't want his nephew to be in league with her.
So here's a very clear connection, actually. What was the thing that Kingpin was so interested in doing after, you know, in Daredevil, after the event?
Save the city.
But specifically, it was the construction contracts to rebuild the buildings that were destroyed in the attack.
Yeah.
So, like, it's a long ways away, but I mean, that would be a very clear connection, because clearly, like, theirs would be one of the houses, there would be one of the apartments that had to be rebuilt, and, like, did insurance pay off? Is Loki's invasion an act of God in terms of insurance? We don't know, but like,
well,
like, that's maybe how she first connected with Kingpin.
Yeah, totally.
It's an act of a God.
Yeah.
Also, in that first scene, her husband just disappears, which made me think, like,
yeah, there wasn't a body.
Yeah, we never see a body.
He ain't dead.
He may not be.
In Marvel, it's not confirmed till you see the body.
Mm-hmm.
And even then.
Even then, yeah. This is really, really, it's not even not confirmed. It's unlikely. Even if you do see the body.
Yeah. I got to cut off the head. The only way.
Yep.
One other little thing I want to just mention just about Kate Bishop's character. I have, you know, I don't watch trailers. I'm trying not to pay attention to stuff, so I didn't know much going in. I realized that Hayley Steinfeld, the actress, also played Maddie Ross in True Grit, which, very different genre. Many of you not have seen it, but like, that character is exactly young Kate Bishop. Like, when Kate Bishop says, like, I need a bow and arrow, you know, Maddie Ross in True Grit is like a 10-year-old girl who hires a bounty hunter because her father's been killed, and is this very like precocious child, but who wants to get involved with this stuff. And I just thought that was a, like, it just made me love what's happening even more when I was like, oh, Hayley Steinfeld has already played this same character as a 10-year-old. So of course now she's playing it as an adult.
That's funny.
That's interesting. Dig it.
She's a little typecast, maybe.
I only knew her as the girl from Pitch Perfect 2, and shockingly, she does not play the same character.
Probably not. I don't know, Pitch Perfect 2, where like they're hiring bounty hunters. That seems like an interesting way to take direction to take the franchise.
That was almost Pitch Perfect 3, if you saw it, and it was horrible. We won't get into that.
Pitch Perfect, the final pitching.
Oh, man. Oh, I have one more question.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, this was like breeze past in the show, but in the auction, the guys who break in and like the ski masks go for a watch from the Avengers compound.
That's right.
What is the watch?
Don't know.
Like, you know?
That was my question. Like, the guy, question. The guy found the watch outside. He was like, oh, I found it. And then got accosted by Lucky the Pizza Dog. And then like,
mm-hmm.
Why was that watch important? I thought that Lucky stole it, and I thought we were gonna get like this silly Oliver and Company montage, you know, like dog running through the streets of New York, why should I worry, you know.
Chris Evans would love that.
Yeah, right. I thought that she was gonna like, she's gonna take in the dog and be like, oh, he's got a watch, and you know, real Snatch kind of situation. But the watch hasn't come up again.
No.
Right.
I don't know.
Where did it end up? Kate Bishop and the dog didn't get it.
Right.
That we saw. So it seems that maybe those guys still got the watch. So what does the watch do? Seems like it's probably connected to... I wonder if we'll find out who bought Avengers Tower. And maybe there's something in Avengers Tower that requires the watch to open it. Or... I don't know. Just maybe it's like Tony Stark's watch that opens a safe or something. I don't know. But this is from the Battle of New York. So that would have been years before it was even called Avenger Tower. So
Juice and Lemons in the chat was asking about who bought the tower and if perhaps it was a particular group of four fantastic individuals.
Could be Kingpin.
It's Oscorp.
Someone in the chat mentioned, I missed this entirely, but it's a fun little thing. The bell tower that was destroyed.
Stain Tower.
Yeah, J.D.U. Meyer caught that it was dedicated to Obadiah Stane.
Which is kind of cool. Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah,
it was called Stain Tower. I was like, what?
That's amazing. That's amazing. Good call. Good eyes there. Good eyes.
Ah.
Man. And we would be remiss as a geek culture podcast if we didn't discuss the LARPing scene.
Oh my God.
No, yes.
I just want to say that entire scene, only one thought was going through my mind. I was like, Steve Rogers wouldn't have to go through this. He wouldn't have to put up with this. Only Clint Barton would have to put up with this.
Right. Right. There's just like, put some respect on Hawkeye's name. Come on. None of the other five Avengers would put up with that. But Hawkeye's too polite and he's too, you know, he's like too polite and too not willing to like actually threaten these people.
Mm-hmm. I love that he did though. Like,
yeah.
He fights his way through everybody and is like, give me the suit. Like,
yeah.
I'm either gonna hit you with this fake sword or this pretend sword and you're gonna fall down. I'm gonna take the suit or I'm gonna punch you. I'm gonna real punch you in the face and you're gonna real fall down and I'm gonna take the suit.
It was so good. It was so beautiful. But I just need to say, as someone who has been a LARPer for many years, were mostly cops and firefighters? No. There was a number of things about that LARP. It was kind of like the Ren Fair scene from Loki, where I was like, I love that they're doing this. We're kind of getting almost to like a Galaxy Quest level of like honoring, making fun of the fans. But like, I raised some eyebrows at that particular line.
Yeah, well, you got to think, like, New York's the biggest city in the world. So you get a little crossover, a little intersectionality between things. Like, if there's a large enough group of firefighters and cops in a city, then the small little intersection of LARPers could have their own little, just like they have a basketball game that's like all cops and, you know, maybe there's a small group of that many of, like, if it's a million cops and firefighters. Right. Maybe there's 100 that are also LARPers. It would be a small percentage.
Many years of LARPing, never been a one. But you know,
in the many years of LARPing, how many times have you burned the corpse?
I can't discuss that.
No, that's classified.
Email classified.
I love that he's just like, please do not call me. Please do not email me. I can't have this showing up on my credit card.
I love this. I love so much when she's like, all right, call you. And he's like in a very like familiar, like I'm your daughter way. Like he's all right, I'll call you. And he says, no, please don't.
I mean, like in the LARP situation, he's like, you know, they're asking name, phone number. He's like, no.
Yep.
No. Email classified. Yeah. Just let me sign the thing and let's get out of here. And then he's like, can you take these back to the front desk? I can't have that showing up on my credit card. Oh, yeah, they will charge you.
Yeah.
I love it. Good. And as he's walking away, he's like, oh, I'm Grills, by the way. He's like, nice to meet you, Grills. I'm on my way. Bye.
I just love the humility of Clint as an Avenger. Like, he is not the guy. Like, I do think that there's a little bit of air of, you know, superiority about most of the Avengers. They'd be like, all right, normal people, we have things to do. But Clint's like, still lives in the world. He still has a family. Yeah. He's still like,
yeah,
doesn't want to just rock the boat too much. He's like, oh yeah, I mean, there's a few scenes like where Captain America has to deal with the Mac store, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't know. Clint's just on a different level. It's just really funny.
Like, Steve doesn't know how to act. I feel like Clint's very capable of just being a normal person and being a face in the crowd, whereas like anyone else wouldn't have been able to do that.
True.
Well, especially because I think it's not, for him, it's not even just an act. It's that he's like, there's this running gag about how Bruce Banner doesn't seem to know he's famous, because all the time he's like, oh my God, I'm with Robert Downey Jr. I kind of feel like Hawkeye has the same thing of, you know, he's surrounded by literal gods and technological wonders and super soldiers. And as he says in Ultron, like, I'm just here with a bow and arrow. Like, I think for him, it's weird that people look at him as a hero, because in his mind, he's just the average guy with no powers who managed to get sucked into fighting alongside these others.
So good.
So good. Okay, another line I just absolutely love, the gentrification of the gangster hideouts.
Oh, yeah.
Cool. He's like,
it's hard, man. You see, all of these are being turned into lofts.
All of the warehouses are being turned into lofts. I couldn't find a better place.
It's so Paul, the guy who's often on my podcast, he grew up literally in the area where Daredevil takes place.
Hell's
and
Kitchen.
So I was often there. And yeah, well, no, but that's the thing. It hasn't been Hell's Kitchen for 30 years because of the gentrification. Like, we were often talking about how Daredevil is a show that, like, does not exist in the modern world. And this, I think, is safe. Like, I love that they had that call out to that.
Yeah, one of my friends talks about that Hell's Kitchen, New York, is really just, like, a few streets. Like, it's mm-hmm. very small part of New York, but they treat it like it's this, like, a borough or whatever in Daredevil.
I mean, it was a big part of, you know, West Side Story is basically set there, but just it's been Disneyfied and gentrified, and now it's totally different.
Disneyfied.
Did you catch the, speaking of being Disneyfied, did you catch the Disney store, like, gigantic prominent logo in Times Square?
Nope. I did not. I missed that.
Oh, dude, it was like, it was the size of Hawkeye. Behind Hawkeye.
Wow.
Like, they were walking, and I was like, God, that's a big logo. I wonder, Disney exists inside of... Oh, it's too much.
Yeah. As they said in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., try not to think about it, or your head will explode.
Yeah.
Was there something in Eternals that showed that Star... Like, reconfirmed that Star Wars exists?
I don't know.
I don't remember there being, like, one of the Earth people had, like, a Star Wars thing, like...
Wouldn't doubt it.
We're getting way off topic here, but...
Wouldn't doubt it. Do we think... We all think the mom's in on it somehow, right? In on something. We don't know who...
Yeah.
Who these... Oh, yeah. Like, who's the Tracksuit Mafia? Who is... The Tracksuit Mafia was the people stealing from the auction. I don't know. Was the mom involved in the auction somehow? We know her... father-in-law is somehow related to all of this stuff. Do we think the mom killed the father-in-law? Because I kind of do. Because they had an argument like an hour before.
I don't know. I don't know. Comics knowledge coming out here. Jacques Duquesne is a character in comics who is often known as the swordsman.
Okay.
Oh, is that the fiancé?
Yeah, that's the fiance. Okay. He's French and he has mustache.
I wanted to rip that mustache right off him.
God,
the time it came on the screen. Never mind. Yep. Go on.
But he has a long history with Clint Barton in the comics. So the fact that he's showing up here and Kate does like a bit of fencing with him, like that, you know, and he stole the sword, like he stole the retractable sword at the auction, like. I think we're being led to he did it, but it could be a double cross.
I think it's a double cross. I think that we're going to find out that Jack the Swordsman is just like a good guy.
A good dude.
A good dude.
Oh, no.
Like, I
don't
really
give me that. Don't give me that shithead being a good guy.
He's just like a gold digger. Like,
God, I hate him.
Well, look, she's the one who's like marrying him to marry into a powerful crime family, and maybe he doesn't even know he's in a crime family. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's just a privileged kid who's been like, kind of like living off his dad, Armand, who's his dad even says, like, you don't have $300,000.
That was his uncle.
Oh, it was his uncle. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of get this feeling that like she's marrying Jack to get into this family that is powerful. And now it's like, and then clearly the uncle and her have some sort of like business discussions going on. So I think there's more going on between the mom and him, and Jack might be like just collateral damage in this relationship. And he might just be trying to be a good stepdad. He like read a book on being a good stepdad.
Yeah, he bought a book. Like, money well spent, Jack.
I think that would be really funny.
I'm sure that most of those books say don't intentionally lose to a child who you're trying to impress, especially not an adult child. Like, but you're right. I think that was so dumb of him to do, unless there's something huge that he's covering up, that I would kind of love it if it was just him, like, trying to do the right thing with her and being an utter idiot at it.
Yeah, I kind of like that idea a lot.
It just, like, it made me think when they were fencing, because she was, like, a state champion or whatever in fencing. I was like, oh, girl, you were kind of fencing during the blip, though. Like, half your competition was gone. Like, are you really that good?
You're half a state champion at best.
Do we know that? Doing math, do we know that she wasn't blipped away?
I think so, because a little detail, when she was typing in her security admin credentials, it said 120202, which would put her, they said 22 years old, which would be 2024. So I think that's her birth date, so she probably wasn't blipped.
She was five nicely in done, 2012.
Melissa. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, right. Yeah. Yep. That's good job. Good job, Melissa, with that very fine detail.
I've been training since I was five, and she didn't start training until after Dad died. So assume Battle of New York, she was five.
Right. Okay. Side conversation, just real quick. That's one thing right now that's going on in the MCU that I don't really love, that we need an explanation for every single person if they were snapped or not.
Yeah.
Like I do it to myself too, because like I was watching Shang-Chi and I'm just like, well, were they snapped? Did they come back?
Right.
What's happening here? Like, I feel like it needs to be addressed.
I like it because I don't feel like you have to address it. I feel like you can just have a character, they're having a different, especially the further away we get from the blip, like it's less like dire that you know if they were blipped or not, but like it's a nice little wrinkle that they can add into any story that I kind of enjoy.
I guess. It's just always something I'm thinking about. Like, were the Eternals blipped? Like, were they excluded from the snap?
We talked about that. I don't know.
I think especially, I'm much more where you are, Melissa, both because I kind of want to do it for individuals, but also because, you know, Falcon and Winter Soldier gave us this idea of, like, this is one of the major political social justice issues of the day, is, like, how are the people who came back being treated and vice versa? And, you know, this has always been the problem as the MCU gets bigger and bigger and bigger, is how do you keep those storylines? But I would like to see just like a little bit of reference to that, you know, cause it was such a big deal in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and it certainly wasn't solved by the end of it. That I think, I feel like people would like, it's such a fundamental experience of who you are that I feel like, it would come up in some way or another.
It was a big part of WandaVision too.
Yeah.
The difference in outlook and opinion of, like, you know, you people that went away, you've got this, you know, happy, cheerful outlook on life, but all of us that stayed, like, you know, you don't know what we had to do to keep the lights on.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
It tells so much about a person's character and motivation to know whether or not they went away for 5 years.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. For totally. Sure.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And I think it's an interesting wrinkle for any character to have, but I guess I don't. Unless it like somehow connects to the blip and they talk about it, like I can get away with just like, especially now that we're 2 years beyond it, like it's like, okay, this character can just be a character.
Forget the blip.
I think for me, it just cheapens it a bit. You know, I want it to be it was such an important thing. I kind of want that to be just like a major thing that affects everyone going forward. But right. You're right. That would get into some repetitive storytelling. So I guess it's a hard balance to find.
But you got so many, like, there are shows that are all like, what's that show where everybody disappeared? The Leftovers. There are shows that like the entire plot is like, let's take a four or five seasons and explore what happens to all these different people when someone disappears from their life. You know what I mean? So it's like, I think it's kind of fascinating. There's still lots of storytelling room, I guess is what I'm getting at. They could continue to weave it into different stories, like, different ways it affected different people.
They're just not giving us enough content is what it is. We're not getting enough content in the MCU. They're having to pick and choose. And, you know, I get that they're trying to tell us the important stories or whatever, but like, I want to know every little detail about what's going on with everyone. Mm-hmm. So like, give it to me, Marvel. I'm ready. My body is ready. Give me more.
Yeah. Speaking of my body is ready, when do we want to take bets on when Yelena will show up?
Ooh.
Episode 5.
I would say 5 as well, because it's a 6 episode series.
Oh.
I would say 5.
I was thinking it was 4. I mean, I think it was 8.
Four. It's 6, right? Is it 4 only?
No. It's 6 episodes.
Okay. Because it goes to the end of December. I'm going to guess probably 4 or 5, but to me the other question is, is she going to appear because she is tied into everything, or is it going to be that, like, separate from all this, Val has, you know, sent her after him, and we get one episode that's kind of a little bit of a side quest, but where, like, Val, like, because of what Val knows, like, we're able to learn more about the history. Because I think it might be the second. I think that would actually kind of be even more interesting than having, like, Val directly tied into all of this.
Yeah, now that I think about it, like, when does that take place? Like, is Ronan returning in this moment? Could that have been when Val goes to Yelena? Like, oh no, Ronan's back. I know what that means. Da, 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 da. I need you to go take this guy out. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I would like to think that it's like a situation where, you know, the tracksuit mafia and dealing and Echo and like all of this stuff that Kate has kind of caused him to have to deal with, like all of that is the A plot, B plot, whatever. It's the small fish, and then Yelena shows up and he's like, I'm still like, I've got this real shit to deal with, and like we're dealing with, can we just button this up, like can we just deal with this tracksuit mafia thing real quick, get this done, like I got real shit to deal with. And then like Kate discovers, like that would be an instance where like Kate discovers what the Ronin suit actually is and what it means, and she gets to see the darkness behind that superhero glean, and then she has to decide whether or not she still idolizes this guy.
Ooh,
Yeah, that could be it. I think another dynamic we might see there is that, you know, Yelena is going after him in part because she has a fundamental, she doesn't understand what actually happened on Vorimir, and. Right. We know that clearly Clint is still processing his feelings of grief and loss for Natasha. And so that might also be another interesting thing as we get an episode that's kind of more about him coming, like that. Yes. Like there's some like fight before they finally figure things out. But like him and Yelena sharing this grief about like them both mourning her might be a way that they kind of, you know, connect.
I hope so. But also, I don't know if they're going to connect or if she's just going to come in guns blazing.
Right.
Just trying to go after him.
Well, that's why I said fight.
They're going to connect.
Yeah.
Something's going to connect with something, whether it's a heart to heart or fist to face. Something's happening.
I mean, two people start fighting and eventually have to start talking because they're out of bullets. Like, that is not a trope we have not seen before in the MCU. It's fairly common. Natasha and Yelena did that, you know?
Yeah.
Anybody else have any last thoughts?
When Yelena shows up, I really want Kate to start idolizing her.
Like, yes, switch teams.
Yeah. She needs to be like, oh my God, this girl's amazing.
Oh my God, yeah. Look at her. Look at those pockets.
Look at all those pockets.
She never poses. I need to stop posing.
Oh, why do I pose so much?
Yeah. I've been theorizing this since we first saw Black Widow and we knew she was going to be on the show. But I really want Yelena to show up. Maybe she gets Hawkeye, maybe she doesn't. But I want the new Hawkeye, her real test of whether she can be the new Hawkeye or not, is whether she can have a sense of forgiveness and convince Yelena to be a good guy instead of a bad guy, just like Clint did for Natasha. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yes.
That's really his superpower, too. It's right. Like taking, you know, taking bad people and converting them to heroes. Like he did it to Nat. Yeah. He did it to Wanda, Pietro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so good.
Yeah. So like, she's been this sort of, you know, like just all about the skills, and she wants to pick up the skills from Hawkeye. But then that moment she's faced with Yelena, who's someone who maybe she has to forgive about something, or maybe Yelena shows up and just kills Hawkeye and she has to like learn to be the guy that Hawkeye is and not just have the skill sets, but also be the hero that Hawkeye is.
Yeah. I don't like the show up and kill Hawkeye.
I don't like it either, but
can we cut that out?
Whatever Yelena does, I will be on her side. I don't care what it is.
Here's a question actually, because I don't know, and it would be relevant for this. In the comics, does Kate Bishop take up the moniker Hawkeye?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of discussion in, if you haven't listened to it, you need to listen to, Marvel's Wastelanders Hawkeye. Okay. That the narrative story is so good. It's set in a world where Zemo and the Thunderbolts and a whole bunch of like team of villains kill all of the heroes, kill like the Avengers, and Hawkeye is left, and Hawkeye and Kate Bishop do have a discussion of like, you're not Hawkeye, I'm Hawkeye. And she's like, there could be two Hawkeyes. He's like, what if somebody walks in the room and is like, hey, Hawkeye? She's like, I'd say, yo, what up?
I love like, it. I'll definitely check that out.
It's such really a good silly. Story.
What I'm hoping for then, because one of the recurring things with Hawkeye is he keeps trying to retire. He keeps trying to go back to be, and then he's got that like Godfather 3, they keep pulling me back in.
Yeah, just what I thought it was.
So what I'm going to put my money on is that we have the climactic battle scene and it seems like he's been killed, but then we like get the final cut to he's back on the farm. He's living happily ever after. And that like him and Kate, like basically like made it look like he would die so that he could finally just retire, be completely off the grid.
Mm, I like that.
That would be nice.
I like that.
That's where I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Because whatever Yelena decides to do, I will be on her side. She could never disappoint.
It's all those pockets.
Oh, all those pockets. It's like mom's favorite child.
The very last joke I had in my notes that I really loved was, do you need my keys? No.
No, I'm good.
No, I don't need your keys. I'm Hawkeye. I get where I want to get. I love it.
Yeah. Yes, Clint, you can go into my apartment.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us here on the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. We'll be back soon. Thank you. Matthew Fox, tell us where people can find your stuff.
Sure. Well, theethicalpanda.com is the home for all of my podcasting. I run the Superhero Ethics Podcast and the Star Wars Universe Podcast, where you can find a lot of great discussion about Star Wars itself. We're getting ready to do episode by episode about Book of Boba Fett. We've been doing episode by episode about Rebels, on Superhero Ethics. We get kind of more into the ethical questions about the stuff. I'm sure Hawkeye will talk about. I just released an episode on Cowboy Bebop, which also got a Hanson song into people's heads, which I was really happy about. Mm. And then you can also find me on the Marvel Movie Minute, which has, where we're doing minute by minute analysis of the movie Thor. On that one, Matt, Jeff, Ashley have all been guests. Melissa, I've not yet gotten you as a guest on one of my podcasts. That's definitely a bucket list item for 2022. So we'll make sure that happens. But yeah,
of course,
a lot of great podcasting happening over there. Please check it out.
Sweet. Anything you would like to plug, Ms. Melissa?
I run the Stranded Panda TikTok, so at Stranded Panda on TikTok. We will start posting on that again regularly as well. And then watch out for a new Stranded Panda Network website coming that I'm designing.
Yeah.
That'll be coming in the next couple weeks, and we're very excited about it.
Yeah, we are.
Are we going to get 100 Days of Pockets on TikTok?
I could
be convinced.
That is a need. That is not a want. That is a need.
That is true.
Well, guys, thank you so much for joining us. Hey, if you haven't yet, please go subscribe on Bingers Assemble. That is our podcast where we rewatch movies, and we are going to be rewatching all of the Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man movies in the next few weeks. Probably watching the first one this week. So the Sam Raimi movies and then the Amazing Spider-Man. I'm super pumped now that we've seen so many of them. So many of the trailers for the new Spider-Man, we're definitely going to be covering those. So check out that. Go subscribe on Bingers Assemble, basically.
And if we're mentioning that, I should also want to mention, also please subscribe to PandaVision, where myself and Supreme Commander Ashley Coffin will be doing episode by episode of The Witcher. And I promise you, Henry Cavill Thirst will be a prime topic of conversation.
Oh, my goodness.
Better be.
Yeah. That is a man.
Yes, it is. All right. Well, thank you guys so much. That will be all for the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. Peace.
War.
Until next time, true believers.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. Available everywhere you get podcasts, and now a video version streaming live on twitch.tv/strandedpandatv and available at youtube.com/strandedpanda. And if you'd like to learn more about all of our other podcasts, geeky projects, and ways to support the network, visit strandedpanda.com.